This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
It's a kind of a blessing. Also, his words about climate changing, environment, poor, and living together, they will be a great message for our country.
That's parish priest Giorgio Ferretti talking about Pope Francis's impending visit to Mozambique just a month after a peaceful deal with Renamo rebels. Details coming up also. Rioters have looted shops and torched buildings and vehicles in Johannesburg. And Algeria's army chief has called for elections later this year to choose a new president. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Dozens of people have been arrested in the South African city of Johannesburg after rioters looted shops and torched buildings and vehicles. Police fired tear gas, rubber bullets, and stun grenades in an attempt to quell the unrest yesterday. Many of the targeted shops are reported to be owned by foreign nationals. To brief us on the escalating violence, we have online Darren Taylor in Johannesburg. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Darren.
Thanks so much, my friend. I appreciate it.
Darren, first, tell us the extent of the violence and where it is occurring, and why are black South Africans attacking other Africans?
Well, at the moment, it is mainly concentrated in Johannesburg, although today also saw incidents in Durban, Cape Town, Pretoria. Basically, though, it's here in Johannesburg today. Police really battled to contain the mayhem. They fired rubber bullets at the plunderers. They arrested many people. Now, in the areas that I visited and where the violence happened today, there are rocks, smoldering car tires everywhere. Everywhere you see shell casings from police firearms. There was also a lot of trouble over here in Joburg in the township of Alexandra. Over there, people hurled rocks at businesses that they said were owned by foreigners. They sang songs to the effect that the Makwere Kwere, which is a derogatory term they use to refer to migrants, should leave South Africa or suffer the consequences. Now, from what I've seen on the ground, the looters are indeed targeting businesses owned by foreigners. But however, once the mob mentality takes over, it's sort of open season, so to speak. And the crowds loot South African stores as well and also attack and assault South Africans. In the city this morning, there was a dead body of a woman. There were burnt-out cars and buses. Then there's also a lot of pieces of footage of violence being distributed in South Africa on social media of people being doused with petrol and set alight. Apparently, these are foreigners, but this isn't confirmed as yet. So you've got all these things happening, and it's very complex.
So, Darren,
it's not just about xenophobia. Yes.
So is there a, maybe criminality added to all this, if it's only not xenophobia? Go ahead.
There's definitely criminals taking advantage of the situation. I don't think, despite what the government says, there can be any doubt that foreigners are being targeted. But from what I have seen, there's definitely criminals that hijack the situation and take advantage and start looting, et cetera, et cetera. And they really don't care who they steal from, whether it's foreigners or not. But from what I've seen, there definitely is an element of xenophobia involved. And, you know, what we're dealing with here in South Africa is that every few months, foreigners who are present in our cities in big numbers get blamed for the fact that locals don't have access to resources, that locals are still poor, et cetera, et cetera. It's easy to blame the foreigners. It's easy to target them rather than addressing the root causes of these problems
right
and
there.
Rather than confronting the power of the government.
So you just mentioned root cause. Darren, it is important to see these events within their context. South Africa is home to many immigrants who never get attacked, and there are many South Africans who get caught up in the senseless violence as well. Could the whole problem be an immigration issue? The unemployment rate in South Africa being 28%, and these places, huge pressure on the lower end of the social ladder here.
Look, definitely. But I don't see, from my experience and all the experts that I've spoken to, I don't think that foreigners are taking South African jobs. Quite the contrary. In my experience, foreigners are mostly creating jobs. But if you go to the really poor areas of South Africa and you see people from Bangladesh, people from Nigeria, et cetera, opening up stores, then it's easy to say, hey, look at these guys. They're taking our jobs. They have access to resources. They're making our money. Whereas, you know, we know that South Africa is a very unequal place. Half the population lives below the poverty line. The other half is split between those who are just a bit better off than that. And then you have a middle class. And of course, like many other places in the world, a tiny elite that controls the majority of wealth. But from what I've seen on the ground, I don't think it is necessarily a problem about foreigners stealing South African resources, et cetera, et cetera. We are dealing with a much bigger problem in South Africa, and that is the failure of the government to create opportunities for everyone,
Darren,
not only locals, for everyone who are present in South Africa.
Darren Taylor in Johannesburg, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
Algeria's Army Chief General Ahmed Gaid Salah has called for elections later this year to choose a new president. He says the Electoral Commission should issue a call on September 15th to pave the way for balloting 90 days later. Protesters insist on postponement until the old ruling elite, including the interim president and his prime minister, are forced from power. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University, about who has the upper hand in Algeria to impose its will in the waiting game of power.
This is the same strategy he's been deploying since April, and the same one that led to the failure of the July 4th election, because most of the population continues to boycott and protest the move towards presidential elections without more fundamental reforms to the constitution, to state institutions, and to the electoral law. And so if the population continues to do what it did before, this is likely to lead to a failed attempt at a presidential election, or even worse, a presidential election which isn't recognized by a lot of the population as free and fair.
Protesters had demanded that the elections be postponed until the old ruling elite, including the interim president Abdel Qader bin Salah and his prime minister Noureddin Badawi, were forced from power. The army, now the main player in Algerian politics, has repeatedly urged the opposition to cooperate in holding an election as soon as possible. Which side has the upper hand to impose its will?
In some sense, neither side has an upper hand, but if you want to just take a strict definition of an upper hand, obviously it's the military, because they're in control of the levers of state power. And all the protesters are doing is refusing to acquiesce, refusing to cooperate, refusing to participate in a system which they have rejected in its totality. And so I think time is on the side of the military, in the sense that always regimes do better if they can wait out crowds, because crowds tend to diminish over time. But if the crowds maintain their size, if things further escalate in the fall, then obviously that will give more leverage to the protesters to exact the type of reforms that they want. One of the things that's interesting these days is to compare what is going on to Sudan. And Sudan has gotten an unusual power-sharing deal, which looks more and more like what the Algerian protesters will be asking for. But whether they can reach this objective will be the big question for the fall.
The dialogue committee is trying to reach a compromise, but the pro-democracy movement refused to go ahead with elections that will be supervised by the old regime. Is there a middle ground to end the stalemate in Algeria?
Well, theoretically, of course, but is anyone advancing a middle position? No. We do have this National Commission for Dialogue, which is receiving some cooperation in some communities and is being boycotted by other communities. Anyone who does propose a middle position gets immediately rejected by both sides. And so, obviously, the middle ground has to be the product of negotiations rather than common advance of negotiations. And right now, there is no negotiation. This National Commission of Dialogue is sort of doling out seats to a hypothetical national conference in a way that looks to protesters like they're just trying to hand out political favors, which is exactly the wrong way to go about creating national dialogue and reconciliation. A real negotiation is what needs to happen, and we haven't had one like we had in Sudan and other transitional situations. And until we have a real dialogue, we probably will remain at some kind of an impasse.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawy. Pope Francis is making a historic visit to Mozambique this week to start a three-nation Africa tour. VOA's Anita Powell has a preview from Maputo.
Mozambique's seaside capital is buzzing ahead of a historic papal visit. Maputo's soaring white cathedral is eagerly preparing for Pope Francis's visit, the first since Pope John Paul II arrived in 1988, while Mozambique was in the throes of a brutal civil war. Leaders signed a new peace agreement earlier this year, and parish priest Giorgio Ferretti says that this visit, too, is historic.
Now the visit of Pope Francis is coming after the last agreement of peace. So it's a kind of a blessing for all this period of talk between the government and the opposition. But also his words about climate changing, environment, poor, and living together, they will be a great message for our country.
And beyond. Catholic pilgrim Simongile Lineke, who is 63, drove 7 hours from neighboring South Africa for the visit.
I hope he's going to say there should be peace amongst the people of South Africa. And he's spreading a lot of love within the Christians.
Although about one quarter of Mozambicans are Roman Catholic, those who are not of the faith say they'll also be paying attention. 22-year-old student Ricardo José Faustino says he thinks it will be very interesting to see the Pope here in Mozambique. Faustino is Muslim, he says, but I think I should listen to him. And others say they're listening for a specific message, like 30-year-old Catholic Dina João Mendes. She says she hopes the Pope brings a message of peace, because we need peace in this country. On Thursday, the Pope's first full day in Mozambique, he will meet with lawmakers, youth, and clergy. This is the pontiff's second trip to sub-Saharan Africa. He first visited in 2015, going to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. On this tour, he'll also visit the island nations of Madagascar and Mauritius. Anita Powell, VOA News, Maputo.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Dozens of people have been arrested in the South African city of Johannesburg after rioters looted shops and torched buildings and vehicles. Algeria's army chief has called for elections later this year to choose a new president. And Pope Francis is making a historic visit to Mozambique this week. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Amid all the news and controversy in the U.S. about refugees, their personal stories can get overlooked. 27-year-old George Tarr fled Liberia's civil war in 1998 with his grandmother and settled in New York's Staten Island, home to several African diaspora communities, a year later. Today, Tarr is a college student and volunteers for a grassroots group that helps African refugees and immigrants adjust. VOA's Adam Phillips has a profile.
George Tarr was born in 1992 in a Liberia that was torn by uncertainty and civil war. Tarr was separated from his mother soon after birth, and when his father and his grandfather were killed by partisans, his grandmother became his sole caregiver.
Yeah, I can remember going to the market with my grandmother when I was like 5 years old, and this guy was talking about how he had killed this guy and his father, and the people in question who he was talking about at the time was my grandfather and my father. My grandmother knew exactly that he was referring to her husband.
So she had quite a broken heart herself.
Yeah, she did. She did.
In 1997, as Liberia's second civil war was about to break, Tarr's grandmother fled the country with George, his brother Ben, and a cousin, and traveled to a refugee camp outside Accra, Ghana. Along the way, they collected Troco, George's 16-year-old brother in Ivory Coast, where he'd been living with relatives since he was a toddler. The next year, the four left for the U.S., hoping for refugee status. They settled in Park Hill, the infamous Staten Island, New York neighborhood where he and Ben still live.
In the past, it was known as Killer Hill or Crack Hill because of the gang violence and the drugs within the neighborhood.
The family was horrified to learn that even in America, life could hang by a thread.
Yes, because after a few years escaping war, we came to a country where we hear gunshot in the neighborhood that we live in. Sometimes people find dead bodies over the roof of these buildings, sometimes in cars and stuff. That's how bad it was in Park Hill.
The family was equally stunned by how many native-born black youth mocked African immigrants as apes and monkeys.
Several times I had to fight at school because African was called so many different names. It was very shocking because people of the same skin color who also had similar history of being deprived were doing the exact same thing to people of the same skin color.
What did your grandmother think of all this?
My grandmother was very strict. African parents have a way of keeping their kids under control, so we kind of cope with it.
Tarr found solace by studying hard and reading as much as he could. He was profoundly moved by Man-Child in the Promised Land, an autobiographical novel by the attorney Claude Brown about coming of age in Harlem in the 1940s and 50s. But George says his most critical influence by far was his grandmother, who died in 2015.
I see myself as a reflection of my grandmother. Each day people tell me that, you know. I never grew up with my father, never grew up with my mother. It's from my grandmother that I know how to be a better man. Life lessons that she teaches me, no teacher or professor will ever teach me.
In her final years, George's grandmother was too infirm to work. So George's elder brother, Troco, quit high school to support the family. Troco never learned to read and write very well. And Tarr's younger brother, Ben, joined a Liberian gang, yet went straight some years later. Today, Tarr helps people like his brothers by volunteering for African Refuge, a community group that advocates for literacy and jobs training, affordable health care, and English language instruction. Meanwhile, he says his best friend is hope.
A human can say, I don't want to talk to you anymore, but you having hope will always be something that will continue to push you.
George Tarr adds that once his immigration status is secure and he graduates from Brooklyn College, he plans to take the Foreign Service exam or continue his humanitarian work for African emigres like himself. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Pastor Louis Baziga, leader of the Rwandan diaspora in Mozambique, has been laid to rest after being fatally shot. The incident has raised concerns about the possible involvement of Rwanda's enemies. Eugene Uimana has details.
Deep sorrow was etched on the faces of Baziga's children and relatives at his funeral in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. His firstborn, Uwase Angel Louise, said her father died a hero, which helps her cope with the loss. What makes me strong now is that my dad doesn't die as an ordinary person. He dies as a hero. That is why I'm standing in front of you strongly, and his heroism will always enable me to walk firmly. On August 26, Baziga was killed in his cart around in the Matola area in the Mozambican capital, Maputo. Matola is the largest suburb of Maputo, and it is home to the biggest industrial area in the southern African country. Claude Nkobisanzwe, Rwanda's ambassador to Mozambique, says they have registered many other cases of killings of pro-Rwandan government citizens.
This kind of attempted murder of Rwandans in Maputo, it's not the first time. We saw many cases since 2012. Of course, Rwandan community in Maputo and in Mozambique in general, they did not understand how someone can be killed daylight on a busy street close to a highway.
Nkobisanzwe says the killers are enemies of the country. They long tried to recruit him into their rebel groups, but he refused. They also proposed for him to keep leading the diaspora, but at the same time spying for them, he refused. And now they killed him. As the government, we can confirm 100% that he was killed by the enemies of the country. So far, six people have been listed as suspects. They include a Burundian official and the members of Rwanda National Congress, RNC, a dissident party operating in exile in South Africa. The Rwandan government calls RNC a terror group. The possible involvement of a Burundian person can fuel relations between Rwanda and Burundi that have deteriorated for more than 5 years. Burundi accuses Rwanda of hosting and training Burundian refugees to topple President Pierre Nkurunziza. Rwanda dismisses these allegations. Another thorn in Rwanda's foreign affairs is tension with Uganda, where many Rwandans claim they were illegally detained and tortured. While the two countries recently signed an agreement to improve relations, people on both sides say nothing has changed in free movement. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has the power to transform the lives of people worldwide, especially in Africa. But often, educational practices are outdated. Rethinking education on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Stand up!